The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.
Short edition of the lunchtime. Doctor, let's say good afternoon, Doc.
Good afternoon, Bees. I know we had a late start today, but of course it was for good reason. Mm-hmm. You know, all of the state of emergency and all of these things. So I know the country is probably on edge. Yeah. And but we have a fun show packed, and I know that it's getting to the end of the year. And usually for the new year, people like to make resolutions, but I am not a big fan of the word resolutions. I prefer building habits that are sustainable. So today we're going to talk about how habits form our lives, how it plays into our health, into our mental and emotional well-being. But of course, we are going to take any questions that come along the way.
All right, folks. Of course, Freedom 106.5 FM 625-2257. We say welcome, and as always, you know, 306-1065. No matter state emergency or not, we still have to take care of our health, because your health is
exactly
your wealth.
Exactly.
Right. So let's talk about some of these habits. Mm-hmm. We just came out of, well, still in sort of like the Christmas season. There's still a lot of indulgence going on. But what exactly is a habit, and why are habits so important for health and well-being?
So, I mean, the technical definition of a habit is a behavior that is very automatic, and it's repeated regularly in response to specific cues that we may give it. Now, habits are actually formed through a process called habituation, and that's where we constantly or consistently repeat something, and that actually creates these new pathways in our brain. And over time, that is going to make that specific behavior easier to perform. Now, the entire mechanism of building a habit is actually governed by a certain part of the brain, and that part of the brain is involved in our reward centers, our decision making, and of course controlling our actions. And habits actually help to conserve our mental energy, because it sort of automates our tasks that we will do routinely. So that is basically freeing up some mental space for more complex decision makings. And I would say that in terms of our health, you know, forming proper habits will help to play a significant role, and it will determine our long-term outcomes. And I mean, for example, if you think about it, you know, if you have regular physical activity, if that is a habit that you perform every single day, that is going to reduce your risk of cardiovascular disease. And of course, if you have something like habit, that can reduce respiratory infections. Now, if you have the unhealthy habits, things like smoking, that actually is going to contribute to cardiovascular disease, and of course contribute to overall mortality or death. So understanding and managing our habits is definitely key to optimizing our health, whether it be physical, mental, emotional, and in the long term, it is essential in preventing any sort of chronic diseases.
And can you explain the science behind how habits are formed?
So people think habits are just something you sort of pick up every day, and maybe one day you just decide to do it, and the next day you continue that process. But habits actually are formed through, like I said, that process of habituation, or something we call a habit loop. And that comprises of three main components. So we have the cue, or the trigger, and the routine, and then we have the reward. Now, the cue or the trigger, that is usually what is going to initiate the behavior, such as if you're feeling stressed. Now, the routine is actually the behavior itself. For example, if you're stressed, you may snack on some junk food, you may pull up a cigarette, or, you know, any sort of behavior that helps to alleviate your stress. Now, the reward is that positive reinforcement at the end of this habit loop, such as, you know, feeling comforted or having your reward centers or that dopamine release from eating the junk food or smoking the cigarette. And repeatedly completing that cycle is going to strengthen the neural pathways in your brain, making the habit sort of automatic. And of course, what is going to happen is that that portion of the brain is going to take over the behavior, and it's going to reduce our reliance on our conscious decision-making centers. Now, dopamine is definitely something that we found that plays a critical role in forming these habits. So when we experience a reward, dopamine levels are going to spike, and that is going to sort of reinforce the association between that trigger and your behavior towards that trigger as well. So it's essential for us to understand that habits are not just something that you do, but it's something that over time sort of builds these pathways in your brain. And by understanding that mechanism, you can start to consciously replace the unhealthy habits with the healthier ones by introducing new cues or new triggers and different rewards.
Okay, and what are some of the key components of building a healthy habit that lasts?
So I would say that building a healthy habit, building one that is very sustainable, is going to involve a lot of consistency and, of course, simplicity and, of course, reward, because we are human and we do respond to rewards, we do respond to that dopamine spike positively. So consistency is definitely critical, because repeated behavior is going to strengthen those neural connections responsible for automating that habit, or basically just forming a habit where you do not need to use a lot of brain power to control. And it actually takes an average of about 66 days for a new behavior to become automatic. Simplicity is going to ensure that the habit itself is easy to integrate into your daily life. So that means that you're not going to have or put up much of a fight to perform this specific task. So it is going to be easier for you to initiate that behavior. And of course, having that reward is going to reinforce that habit loop. For example, if you start to pair exercising with an enjoyable activity like listening to music, that is going to increase the likelihood of you adhering to your exercise routine every single day. Additionally, if you start to set clear goals and you start to track your progress, that can provide some level of motivation for you to initiate your habit every single day. And I mean, there are certain studies that suggest combining something called implementation intentions. For example, saying, I will exercise at 7 a.m. every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And of course, having some sort of positive reinforcement to increase the success rate of you performing these habits.
Of course, folks, you're listening to The Lunchtime Doctor today right here on Freedom 106.5 FM, Sangeet 106.1 and Sky 99.5, as we talk about some of your habits. And what role does the brain play in habit formation? Can you explain?
So remember, there are specific parts of the brain that are involved in certain activities. So a specific part of the brain called our basal ganglia that is involved in the reward and the decision making and, of course, our motor control. So that is essentially responsible for creating these neural pathways of these continuous habits that we will be performing every single day. And of course, habits are going to help to conserve our the energy that is expended by the brain, because it is essentially automating routine tasks. For example, if we are, you know, riding a bike, or if we are driving a car, all of these things are automated routine tasks, and they are going to free up basically our brain systems, or free up our cognitive resources, so that we may be able to use those cognitive resources for conscious and complex decision making.
And let's say a habit like smoking. Smoking is definitely a bad habit, but some people do it anyway. I mean, some people might know it's not good for them. Some people say because, you know, boy, the stress, the this, the that. But how does a habit like that develop to somebody smoking?
So remember, we talked about habits are formed because of this habit loop, them having a trigger, then having a behavior, and then having a reward system. For some people, unfortunately, they find a trigger, for example, having a stressful day at work or having stress in other means. And they probably have found having a cigarette, and a cigarette contains, of course, addictive substances, that actually allows them or allows their body to relax. So the behavior would be smoking the cigarette. And then their reward would be that relaxation that comes after smoking the cigarette. And on top of having that habit loop, then cigarettes themselves actually have nicotine, which is an addictive substance. So basically, you're compounding an addiction on top of a habit loop. So it is very difficult in some cases for some smokers to actually quit, because it's not just that habit loop that is forming, but it's also an addictive substance. But there are ways that smokers can break free from that smoking, or can break free from those challenges that may come from quitting smoking. And of course, the right strategies and support is going to help that. You know, for example, I usually suggest to set a date where you want to quit smoking. So choose that specific day to quit smoking, and you commit to it. And that gives you a clear goal to work towards. So that is you forming a new habit where you break out of smoking. You also have to understand your triggers. So identify the situations, the emotions, and even certain habits themselves that make you want to smoke. And you need to start to avoid those triggers, or find healthier alternatives for those triggers. And of course, having a support system, support groups, professional help, your friends and family, and there are even nicotine replacement therapy for those who want to seriously quit smoking as well.
All right. And how long does a habit actually last? So how long does it actually take to form a new habit according to science?
So in terms of forming a new habit, you know, some people actually say it takes about 66 days for us to actually have that automated response to a habit. But in most cases, it actually takes about 21 days or 3 weeks to form that new habit. So if you are consciously doing it for 21 days every single day, you are going to start to form a new habit. And by around the two-month mark, what is going to happen is that habit is going to become automated, especially if you are performing the same task every single day at the same time.
Okay. And what is the role of motivation and willpower in habit formation? Are they enough?
So the thing about motivation and willpower, they definitely can help to initiate a habit. But in terms of having long-term success of a habit, they are very or often insufficient. Now, motivation is typically strongest at the beginning of a new behavior, but over time, it's going to tend to wane. So it's like, you know, when people say that they are going to start the new year strong and they are going to go to the gym, every single day for the new year. So maybe by Carnival, they can get in shape, etc. That motivation is typically strongest in the first week of the new year. But over time, for example, by the second month of the year, most people sort of fall off that wagon. That motivation is going to tend to wane. And willpower, on the other hand, that is a what we would call a finite resource. And that is usually demonstrated by something we call the ego depletion theory. And basically what that says is that self-control is going to diminish with repeated use throughout the day. So instead of relying solely on motivation and willpower, creating those systems and those structures that make the desired behavior that you want to perform, it will make it much easier to execute and much more effective in the long term. So for example, if you find that after the second week of the new year, you don't find yourself wanting to go to the gym anymore, or you find your motivation dwindling, what you can start to do is prepare your gym clothes the night before. And that is going to sort of eliminate decision fatigue and lower the barrier for you to exercise. And there's actually a book called Atomic Habits. It's a very good read for anybody who wants to learn about building new habits efficiently and effectively. And it's a very easy read as well. They actually emphasize in that book that systems that you build is going to beat willpower, because what you're doing is creating environments that naturally encourage your behaviors, or naturally encourage the behaviors that you desire or the behaviors that you want to develop.
So we have a call coming in there. Hello, good afternoon. Welcome to the Lunchtime Doctor. Hello? Caller? All right, missed that one there. Of course, feel free to give us a call at 625-2257 and 306-1065 as we're talking about those habits. So in terms of just like dropping a bad habit, to say, how does one like drop a habit? Let's try to see if we get the call coming in. Hello, good afternoon.
Blessed day to you, based on to my doctor.
Hi, good afternoon.
Okay, so here was some 2 quick points. This is the time for sweeteners. Black cake, favorite, cooks. There's no way to do it. So I don't take much indulgence because of diabetes. I'm not that sick. I keep it just so safe. But we had some argument about the skin program with some people yesterday at lunchtime. I was dealing with like cola, I wouldn't call it name. Okay, so you have a 2 liter cola, 58 grams of sugar, doc. At 1 liter, same, at 20 ounce, same 58 grams of sugar. A little boy, grams of sugar too. So what is it really the cause of? I don't seem to understand this one, because all have 58 grams. What is the cutoff amount have 58 grams? And the other thing is nicotine. What is the effects of nicotine? I think it's damage your brain or what are effects? You can explain to us about nicotine. Thanks a lot, Doc.
Okay, no problem. So in terms of the first question, I didn't really get the gist of it, but I heard he was talking about the different amounts of sugar in different sodas. Now, it doesn't matter how much sugar is in a soda. You need to know how much you are supposed to intake every single day. For men or for adults, in men, no more than 36 grams of sugar, and that is no more than 9 teaspoons of added sugar per day. And for women should not have more than 25 grams or 6 teaspoons of added sugar per day. And for children, the same thing as women, no more than 25 grams of added sugar per day. But if they're under 2, we usually try to tell you to avoid any sort of added sugar altogether. So, I mean, if a bottle of soda says 58 grams of sugar per day, of course, that is much more than the serving per person, Pudi, but it is very, very rare to find somebody who actually adheres to that 36 grams of sugar or that 58 grams of sugar. But this is why it's also important for us to start reading nutrition label, because we tend to think a bottle of the normal soda is a serving per day. But in reality, that is probably giving you about two or more servings of your daily intake of sugar per day. So it really is essential for us to start understanding our nutrition labels and how it comes into play in our daily intake of certain substances. Now, in terms of nicotine is very addictive. And it does have a wide range of effects on your body. So if we're talking about our brain or the central nervous system, it's going to act as what we call a stimulant. And that means it is going to release dopamine, which is going to create that feeling of pleasure and relaxation. And in some persons, it can actually increase your alertness and your concentration. In terms of your heart, it is going to raise your heart rate as well as your blood pressure. And in terms of your respiratory system or your breathing system, it does irritate your airways, and it is going to make it more difficult to breathe. And in some persons, it will temporarily suppress their appetite and increase their metabolic rate as well. Now, in the long term, it is very addictive, and it's going to lead to a lot of dependence. And if you're trying to withdraw, some people do experience symptoms like irritability and anxiety and cravings, and it does increase your risk of heart disease and heart attacks and strokes. And of course, we do find a lot of smokers having COPD, and it worsens asthma symptoms. So these are just some of the effects of nicotine itself, and they are much more, but the main thing to know is that it is a highly addictive substance, and it can have a very negative impact on the body as well.
Mm-hmm. And what is the role of willpower? How important is our willpower? And, you know, because you know some people who can quit smoking and other bad habits, cold turkey, just like that. I'm going to quit and I'm going to do that. But how does willpower work when it comes to your habit?
So this is a very good question, because there are some people who can will their way out of situations, and in some instances, we like to say you bad mind and your way out of the situation. But I mean, in terms of willpower, yes, there are some people who can quit cold turkey, and for them, they probably have had a very serious trigger that caused them to quit. For example, we definitely find people who have had near-death experiences, for example, a very severe heart attack due to smoking, they are very easily convinced that it is time to quit smoking. And as soon as they come out of the hospital, they completely give it up. Now, for some people, their trigger may not be as serious, or the consequences of their trigger may not have been as serious. So their willpower may not be as strong as somebody who has had serious consequences. Remember, we did say that willpower, it is a finite resource, meaning that your self-control is going to start to diminish with repeated use of that substance throughout the day. So instead of relying solely on your willpower, it is important to start to create those systems and structures in place that is going to make it easier for you to quit a bad habit and for you to perform a good habit more efficiently and more effectively. So I wouldn't say to rely solely on willpower. I definitely suggest that if you want something to withstand the test of time and basically be sustainable in the long run, you need to actually put systems and structures in place for it to do so.
And speaking of systems and structures, what strategies can people use to replace a bad habit with a healthier one?
So I would say that one effective strategy would be to use what we call habit substitution. And that is going to involve you identifying the cue that is going to trigger the bad habit and consciously replacing that unhealthy behavior with a healthier one that provides a similar reward. So, for example, someone who smokes when stressed, you may want to start to replace that smoking with some deep breathing exercises or a quick walk, which also helps to reduce stress. And I know just saying that, you know, a lot of smokers might think that is not going to help me. But if you actually put down the cigarette and actually go for a walk, you will find yourself feeling a lot more relaxed and a lot more at ease than the cigarette will help you to feel. Now, another strategy is something called environmental modification, where you start to alter your surroundings to make that desired behavior much easier. For instance, placing healthy snacks at your eye level in the kitchen, or keeping some workout clothes in plain sight, that is going to help you or encourage some healthier habits. And, you know, there are studies that show that individuals who set up cue-based environments where the cues for your healthy behaviors are prominent, they had a higher likelihood of replacing those negative habits. And support from your friends and your family, or even having an accountability partner or accountability groups, can also play that significant role in reinforcing healthy behaviors.
All right, just about 7 more minutes away from 1 o'clock. You listen to the Lunchtime Doctor, Freedom 106.5 FM, Sangi 106.1, and Sky 99.5. Let's get a call. Hello, good afternoon.
Yeah, very, very interesting. Now, Doc, here's the thing. So the cutoff of the amount of 7 grams. We know that. No. What about nicotine? If I consume coffee, 2 cups of coffee, then I like green tea, and it is not decaffeinated. So what is the cutoff amount now for the nicotine in tea and coffee? Times $1 million.
Now, I think it's caffeine that is found in tea and coffee. It's not the nicotine. Now, in terms of the caffeine, we usually like to say, of course, if you can't stay away from caffeine, try to stay away from caffeine. But for adults, we would usually say about 400 milligrams of caffeine per day. And in pregnant or breastfeeding women, we try to tell them definitely stay away from the caffeine, but anything less than 200 is usually safe. And of course, children should not be consuming caffeine. I mean, caffeine does help with the alertness and the focus, and it's going to boost your energy and your mood. But if you have that excessive consumption per day, you may get anxiety or jitters, etc.
Okay, and what role does accountability and support systems play in maintaining a habit?
So I would say that having that accountability and those support systems, they will significantly increase the chances of you creating a new healthy habit and, of course, maintaining that habit long-term. So having social support, it will help you to stay motivated. It will provide some sort of encouragement during your setbacks. And, of course, you know, if you have persons that are performing the habit that you want to perform yourself, they will be able to offer some sort of practical advice to you. Now, having someone to share that progress with, whether it is a workout partner or a friend who shares the same health goals, that will reinforce some sort of positive behavior. You know, all these studies actually show that people who engage in group exercises or wellness programs, they are more likely to stick to their routines as opposed to trying to build that habit on your own. Nobody's saying that you can't do it on your own. We're just saying that, you know, the studies show that if you do it with an accountability partner or with an accountability group, it is more likely that you will maintain that habit long term. And of course, accountability mechanisms such as Having those regular check-ins or progress tracking, that can help individuals stay committed. And that is why people who hire personal trainers or personal coaches, they are able to see a lot of progress because they are accountable to those coaches and they have their regular check-ins with their coaches as well as their progress tracking as well.
All right. 4 minutes away from 1 o'clock lunchtime, Doctor. And how can someone recover when they slip up or fall off track with a habit they're trying to build?
Now, you know, the first thing to know is that slipping up when you're trying to build a new habit is very common. But recovery is definitely possible. You have to be compassionate with yourself. And of course, you need to make the realistic adjustments. So first of all, it's important to not view that setback as a failure, because that is going to lead to a lot of feelings of guilt and demotivation. Instead, you want to adopt a mindset of progress, not perfection. And that allows for a more forgiving and a more adoptive approach. And, you know, individuals who view setbacks as a natural part of the process, they are more likely to regain their momentum. And secondly, it's definitely helpful to assess what led to the slip up and use that as an opportunity for learning. You know, did a trigger cause the habit to break? Was the goal too ambitious? And by analyzing the situation and adjusting the approach, you know, individuals will be able to regain that momentum and that motivation as well. And reframing setbacks and emphasizing the small incremental improvements are actually what helps to rebuild your habits. So you need to take a step back, revise your goals, and start again with small, manageable steps. And that will be able to ensure that that habit is going to eventually stick.
All right. So before we go, Doc, any other advice about those habits, good habits, bad habits? What is your habit? Do you have a bad habit?
It's always good to know what your bad habit is. So my bad habit is, and it usually comes after having been on a prep and a specific diet for an extended period of time. So I would form my habit of eating, you know, very healthy in terms of my salmon and cucumber and vegetables and all of these things I'll be eating for months. But then, you know, you do get a little bit of a cheat meal after that. And I would say that sometimes I tend to go a little overboard with the sugar on some days, but that is all a part of the process. And I know that. I know that, you know, yes, one day I may have eaten a little too much sugar, but the next day I can get back up and get on track, because before I've already built that foundation where I know how to eat healthy, how to manage my sugar, how to manage my carbs, etc. So I think, you know, my guilty pleasure is I do enjoy sweets as much as the other person, and I may go a little overboard after a prep.
And what's your good habit that you, I guess, you're working out is a good habit?
Yes. So every single day. So that's one of my good habits. And It has really helped me in terms of, you know, feeling calm, feeling at peace, and feeling balanced as well. So I think that is a good way to get yourself feeling motivated. And a lot of people may think that is in isolation, but when you form a good habit, what tends to happen is that the rewards and the qualities that you gain from that good habit actually spill over into other facets of your life. So the discipline, the consistency, the motivation, all of those things are going to spill over into not just the workout, but into your daily job, your daily life, and your relationships as well.
Mm-hmm. All right, my nice. Well, thank you there very much, Doc. Nice to hear you back on the airwaves. And of course, you'll be here tomorrow on the New Year's Eve.
Will be there, and we have some special guests coming in.
All right. Okay. Thank you very much. All right, folks, you've been listening to The Lunchtime Doctor right here on Freedom 106.5 FM, Sangeet 106.1, and Sky 99.5. Do enjoy the rest of your day and be safe.
The best insight, instant feedback, accountability, the all-new Talk Radio, Freedom 106.5.